to take an intro.
How you doing today? Come here, let me show you something. How about this one? You like this one?
Oh, yeah, that one's pretty.
That's pretty right there. Now, hang that on the tree.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I like the blue balls.
5, 6, 7.
Season 8.5.
I like the blue ball.
8.5.
Like a disabled veteran who plants himself in the body of an alien species in order to have more sex, ladies and gentlemen, you've got blue balls, the way of water. My name is Jake Beckhardt, and I'm your intrepid co-host, and I am joined this week by my intrepid co-host, Mr. Trey Fillmore. Trey, hey, how are you this week?
I'm doing well. How are you, Jacob?
I'm okay. I haven't seen Avatar yet, and I mean Avatar 1. I haven't seen it. I've seen little bits and bobs of it. A couple people have shown me extended clips of it on, like, laptops in college, and I will not be seeing Avatar 2. It's in fact, I have so much free time on my hands. I'm going to see so many Oscar movies this year. I don't think I'm going to see Avatar 2 because I haven't seen the first one, and it feels like a real investment. Am I making a mistake, listeners? Will you come jump in the comments and please let me know if I'm being a snob, if I should show up for Avatar, The Way of Water, for our boy Jimmy C.
Yeah, Jake, don't you know if you don't watch Avatar, it means you don't care about the environment? That's the virtue.
I have
signal.
Heard that, yeah.
I'll probably see it. I mean, I do have a list of Oscar movies, but you can't use that because it is nominated for Best Picture. So if you are going to see every Best Picture, you have to see that movie.
I know it. Yeah, you have to. It's like Dune last year, except for people liked Dune.
And
I mean, people like this too, right?
Yeah, people like it. It's whatever. It's a nice, big, fun, beautiful, you know. It's an experience.
I tried to, when I had COVID, I had some leftover magic mushrooms from a trip that I took. And sort of coming down from COVID, and I ate some mushrooms because Serena was out of town that weekend. And I was like, and I got kind of high, you know, I got mushroomy. And then I was like, I don't know what to do with this. I couldn't come up with anything to do. I was like, suddenly this feels like work. And so I tried to watch Dune, and I can tell you, not the right choice. Really, I figured it out maybe 10 or 15 minutes in. I was like, I don't think this is going to be a nice experience for me. So I turned it off and I took a coloring book back down to the river.
Yeah, they say you should go in with an intention when you take mushrooms, and I don't think to watch Dune is an intention. Jake,
yeah, no, I didn't.
Two things, and they're related. One, in a second, you can tell the audience why we can't go two podcasts in a row sounding functional. And related, don't go too far away from your Wi-Fi because you're starting to break up whatever your nice hotspot is.
Okay, well, it's working just fine for me. I'm catching all of my own audio. So if there's choppiness, it's going to be in our dialogue. And we don't have that good of a rapport anyways, you know. We'd sort of struggle to keep up with each other regardless. But of course, part of it is due to the fact that my computer immediately stopped charging for good. Died, kaput, it's gone. I got a new computer, rushed to my home, one that I'd been meaning to buy for a while, but forgot, of course, that it would only have a USB-C port, rendering my USB-B mic absolutely useless, a shambles of its former self. So until I get the adapter, we're recording on this tinny voice memo approach, so please, folks, don't hold it against me. The good news is, I'm not going to have that much to say. I'm kind of a dummy, and I'll just hold back so that you get even less of this tinny-ass tenor in your ear.
Yeah, unfortunately for me, it's not gonna chop for the audience. It's just gonna chop for me. So I may ask you to speak again, as if I have a hearing impairment, which I, you know, pretty much do from being a dumb kid going to music concerts too much. But that may happen, and we'll see.
Great, can't wait. Shall we get into it, Trey?
We should. And the last funny thing is that, so I'm talking to you on Discord, and that's the choppiness. And I don't use Discord, so I logged in for the first time since probably April of last year. And I got a message from May last year from a fan who said, hey, when is that merch dropping? And
oh, shit.
I'm going to have to respond and
say, shit.
Hey, sorry, I was busy doing something. Sorry, I didn't get back to you.
You get fans on Discord? They hunt you down on Discord?
Yeah, man. People listen to our podcast. I know it's taken 8 years to figure that out. But people
no one hits me up. It's because they know that you're the brains of the operation. Hmm. We did get some merch orders this week. Did you see that?
I did. Thank you, guys.
People, I think, really picked up on the desperation in our voices when we released the last episode.
Yeah. Buy more merch and you'll continue to get... Jake screaming into his iPhone while I can't hear him on Discord. This is the quality you get.
That you pay for. You pay premiums for. I have a really good idea. I haven't vetted this with you at all yet. And I was going to say it last week. But now I'm going to say it on air and so you can react live to it. I have this idea for a... I was like, okay, we have a low ceiling in terms of the reach of our podcast. But I want to do more stuff. We've always wanted to do more stuff. And ultimately, we're very comfortable with the way that this show goes. And, you know, trying to stuff more stuff into the show doesn't really pay major dividends. But sometimes I think about, you know, could we make other things in addition or things like that? And I was thinking about, I was like, it would be cool to do like a blowback style or hardcore history style semi-scripted podcast about soccer. And specifically zooming in on, you know, momentous matches in soccer history and using them as case studies to examine the like socio-political moment in the places that those matches were being played, the city or the country or whatever, and do like, you know, deep dive episodes, 90 minutes, maybe 2 hours that are partially scripted. That where we like that are like fairly research heavy, do maybe four of them over the course of the year. Or maybe it's something that we could do in the off season, not this year, obviously, but next year, you know, as a kind of like a fun little side project. And then maybe make that available on Patreon or just like release it. Because again, low ceiling. It's not like we're going to get a bunch of people paying just for that content. But wouldn't that be fun? Wouldn't that be like a fun book report to write, I guess?
It does sound fun because, actually, Brain Meld. What's the name of that game that we play?
Mind Meld.
Almost.
What am I thinking?
Yes. What am I thinking / Mind Meld? One idea I had. Also, in the off season, I think, because I was watching some, they were playing reruns of like old games on either one of the free channels or something else. But they were, or I found it on YouTube, whatever, a full match of like Barcelona Real Madrid 2006. So like, you know, you're getting the best players to have ever lived all on the field at the same time, at least in my lifetime. And like, I was like, wow, me and Jake should just get drunk and, narrate the game while I talk about how much I love these people when I was younger, and you can react to seeing some of them for the first time in your life. And so that's a very my version of your idea, and yours is a very your version of your idea. So I think we can meet.
Well, you say that, Trey, but the reason that I'm so emphatic about my idea is I think you'll be better at my idea than I'll be better at your, than I will be good at your idea. Yeah, but there's no reason we couldn't do both. Because you have a brain for this stuff, especially. Nobody knows lore like you do, really. And not just lore, but like the context of that lore, right? You're not just a statistics machine. Like, you're a narrativization of those statistics. It's something you do really well. I think anybody listening to this podcast will agree. And so if we took that and like applied it to a historical lens, I think that could be dope.
Oh, yeah, that's, I don't know how to take compliments, so suck my dick.
Okay, great, we'll do.
No, that sounds exciting.
So, okay, so now you finally have something to look forward to, folks, unlike the 2023 season with NYCFC. Just kidding. Come on, let's get into it. It's not the end of the world. We talked last week about how many core members we're losing, how clearly this is going to be the rebuild season that we were anticipating a little bit more of last season. It's just going to happen, right? We've lost a ton. We've lost the play identity mostly, not entirely, but mostly. And we flirted a little bit with talking about the captaincy, where the captaincy goes with Sean John on the move. But today we're going to zoom in a little bit, maybe not even a full hour, but we're going to do some work to talk about who's coming in, who might be coming in, who's being discussed, what holes are we plugging, you know, and how successfully are the prospects that we've picked up likely to plug those holes. Trey, I'm going to throw it almost immediately to you because I want to know who you're most excited to talk about in terms of the names that have been bandied around in terms of NYCFC acquisitions.
I'm going to change my settings on Discord and see if I can hear. I did get most of what you just said, but I'm wondering if there's a better way. But I did kind of understand what you said, but I also have another idea for you, sir. And that is, let me see if I can fix you like Coldplay.
Lights will guide me home?
No, there's no way to fix this. You're just going to be bouncing around. We'll fix it in a break. We'll take a break at some point. I'll let you narrate. My idea was, there's so much changing everywhere, and we can kind of merge two ideas together. What if we go position by position, or position group by position group?
Yeah, no, I'm down. That sounds great. That sounds smarter than anything. Do you want to start? I mean, I feel like the place where there's the most consternation is the midfield. Do you want to start there, or do you want to save it for dessert?
Much like a beautiful man or woman or any other person that you're interested in, I think I'm better starting either at the top or at the bottom. I don't know what that metaphor was.
That was a really, really long way around.
Oh, I don't know if you
great. Start at the like a beautiful man being gauged for a relationship. I think I'll start at the bottom. Talk about the defense, and where you're into. Conveniently, right? I feel like we wrap things up mostly talking about Alex Callens. What is the defense on this team like without an Alex Callens? You've still got Maxime Cheneau, the heir apparent to the armband. How do you build a defense around him? Do you build a defense around him?
Great, that's a good question, and I'm still fiddling with my Discord settings. I know, that's so annoying, and it's even more annoying for me to say out loud, but it is honestly getting... how do I get out? I'm such an old man. I'm like, how do I get out of your face? Okay, fuck it. I'm just going to talk. I mean, I can still pretty much hear you, but it's so fucking furious that... let's take a break soon so we can find something else that will work. Okay.
Deal.
So... I just have a strong feeling it's your Wi-Fi, because I take no personal accountability.
I can hear you like gangbusters. I can hear everything. You're crystal clear for me.
That's so funny. You're like, I can hear you like, that's what I hear. okay. Why can't we just get walkie-talkies? Would have been so much nicer. Cheneau, let's go. Soccer, okay? So you're right. Alex Callens left. We talked about all the departures before. I think it's going to be important to kind of couch a lot of this in the press conference that happened today. The preseason press conference, which, by the way, does not happen. We have not had a preseason press conference in a very long time. If ever, I can't even remember, but I was going through my emails and I didn't see one. So, had a press conference, nothing hugely revelatory, but a lot of things that contextually kind of add to, a lot of the discussions, about, going into the season. And, you know, 80% of it is Nick Cushing saying we have a very strong squad and our squad is very solid. So everything else. Talk about Cheneau. Let's talk about the defense. I did notice that Nick Cushing mentioned kind of the three in the back system a lot. I think it was an important, at least milestone for this team last season, in terms of like a turning point, something that really changed, the fortunes of this team and got out of the losing streak and added a lot of different dimensions to this team. A lot of that, you know, hinged on Alex Callens being able to switch into a left back if we needed him to. When it comes to center backs, as you mentioned, we have Thiago Martins. You have to hope Thiago Martins takes that step that a lot of DP players can do, which is known as the David Goss theorem, where DPs coming from another country sometimes take a huge step up in their second year and not their first year. And we have to hope that Martins is that guy. We're paying him DP money, and we will need him to be at that level. Maxime Cheneau has been a top center back in this league. He has received Defensive Player of the Year votes in the past. He did not play more than whatever, 1,500 or whatever minutes last season. We will need more from him, obviously. And we'll talk about captaincy at some point. I just found it very interesting, the conversation I had with him in this press conference when it comes to that. But if you are going to play three in the back, well, that leaves some space to decide something else. Well, Justin Hack played. I don't know. I think we didn't talk about it on the podcast. It kind of feels like an overwhelming failure. Whether it was preparation, putting someone in a position they weren't ready to play, a player that just wasn't good at playing that position, a lot of unknowns, but that's obviously an option they see there. We have Kwaku Wusu, who's a homegrown player that may see more time in that position this year. He was on the roster for plenty of games last year and only got one little run out to make his debut. Maybe the team trusts him a lot more going into this season, still to say. And our signing, one of our few signings, was at this position, center back, in Tony Alfaro. Tony Alfaro is a Mexican national. He is a MLS veteran, and he was the keystone of perhaps the worst defense in the league last year at DC United. So we got veteran depth, which is nice, at center back. The problem is we need that and quality starting if you want to play a three in the back system. At least that's where we are right now. I want to see what the team does. In preseason, they've played four at the back. If they play four at the back, we're okay. If Cheneau can stay healthy, if Martins can stay healthy, I really think that this team will have to float on Alfaro's appearances, you know, try to keep them few and far between and hope that he can play consistent enough or be ready to play when needed. And also will need to lean also on Kwaku if he's ready to play as well, because he made an impact on the two team last year. And this team obviously seems, with the vacancies everywhere, seems to place a level of responsibility or emphasis on the homegrown players this year. So obviously center back is like just a huge drop off without having Alex Callens and not signing a player of his level. But I think if you play four at the back, you know, we have enough quality starting to level with other people, but it is a area of concern, which will be a repeated phrase.
Tell me a little bit more about, like, predictions for Tony Alfaro, because, you know, just because someone is a veteran, as I think you're making the point, doesn't mean they're good, right? Like, where do you feel like, do you feel like Alfaro, why did we pick him up? What was the game? Was this just like a person that we could get on the cheap who helps create a little depth in a position where we need it? Or is there a quality to his play? Is the goal truly for him just to be good enough? And do you see, you know, given his like recent history, do you see that as being a likelihood, or is it just a kind of, you know, it's cheap enough to acquire him, and so we're going to acquire him because we need to shore up our defenses?
Yeah, in terms of specifics,
I guess what my question is it a cynical poll or is it an optimistic poll for you?
What did you say before poll the first time?
Cynical.
Okay. Oh, okay. I don't know. I wouldn't describe it as cynical. I'm sure they see something there. I think, you know, he has the physical qualities of being a center back that can compete in this league. He's survived in this league for so long, which not many center backs can do. And I think it's a testament to, like, you know, his work ethic and his congeniality and his ability to blend into a locker room, you know, speak multiple languages, and has the physicality. You know, I think he's a good player to have in your locker room, if you know, and to practice centerpieces against, practice set pieces against, you know, just that veteran leadership, because we had a very young team and we lost a lot of players, and so now the team's even younger than it was before. I think that's could be a concern. So having a player like him, now you have three veterans in the back line with Martins and Cheneau and Alfaro. Like, and those are guys who will, like, you know, when you have, you know, we'll talk about goalkeeper, I don't know when, but when you are transitioning goalkeepers, like, you need people that can organize and take that step. And I think all those qualities are things they see in him. It's not like he's got a ceiling to grow into, I guess is what I'm saying. Like, we know what we got. We got a bag of fries, and like, we know we got a bag of fries. We're not hoping for that was the end of the metaphor.
Let's take that opportunity then. Let's talk about goalkeeper, because that was also one of the things that was, you know, discussed at this preseason presser, right? Was like, about with Sean John gone, it seems very likely, at least for the short term, that we're going to be It seems very likely for the short term that we're going to be working with Barrazo, and that one of the priorities in preseason, regardless of where Tony Alfaro slots into any of this, is going to be Cheneau balancing the relationship between what's his name? You've just been saying his name so many times. Martins. I kept on going to GP. With Thiago Martins, balancing the relationship with Thiago Martins himself and Barraza, where do you see that position going? Are you hearing things that make you feel like that Barraza will fall back into a second goalkeeper position? Or is he good enough, you know, in what we've seen, that he'll be the starter for the time, that the starter position is his to lose?
I think this is one of the many positions where competition can be nurtured and cultured based on some signings. And that will come up in a bigger sense at right back. But in this sense, like, it seems like Barraza's the guy. He's been with the team now, is, I think, either this is his fourth year or for 4 years. I think this is his fourth year. And it definitely came up in the press conference. It was probably the weirdest thing to talk about in the press conference, right? Because no one wanted to say, because it seems stupid to be like, is Sean Johnson leaving or not? Because you know you're not going to get an answer. And it seems like the answer is yes. So it's pointless. So that means you have to talk around these things. It was very similar to the Tati situation. What Nick Cushing was saying about Barraza was that, you know, he's looked very good. He mentioned Barraza a few times, saying, like, he's looked good in this preseason. We're excited to work with him, blah, blah, blah. He mentioned Mazzel, you know, Cody Mazzel still hanging out, that great veteran fucking, you know, goalkeeper that you're going to have. I think me personally, like, just knowing kind of the system and the situation and where players lie, I think Rando's a great keeper, a nice guy, came through the academy, played on all those great teams, but it seems like, you know, he's should be comfortably at that two level, and it's better for a keeper like him. He's in the preseason right now, but it's better for a keeper like him to stay at that two level than sit as a third goalkeeper on an MLS team. It seems like, you know, how he won't get the minutes that will make him a better keeper. So it seems like we are, like, Barraza was the guy. Maxime Cheneau was a little more candid when he said, you know, we thank Sean Johnson for all, I'm not quoting directly, you can read our tweets about this, like, we should thank Sean Johnson for all he did for this club. And some of what he did for the club is teaching Barraza, you know, and that's something I didn't even think about. But that is something that's true, and I think is a good thing to consider. the question is, are you comfortable with Barraza going in as your starting keeper if you're a team that wants to win the cup? It's an unknown. I think he's shown some very good things when he's played in the limited minutes we've seen him, and there's some things that have not blown our socks off as well, but it's way too early to nitpick at those things either. And the most important thing when you're a goalkeeper is the consistency, is the pressure consistently. It's no, like, once you get week after week after week, like, I don't think people understand, like, playing goalkeeper is a lot of just, like, the hardest thing is being able to keep your focus the whole time, and that's, like, taxing mentally. And there's, like, neuron connections related to, like, your anxiety that you don't get over until you get more playing time, where every Saturday your brain will, and every Sunday and whatever, your brain will start to get used to the idea of waiting for shots to come, and it will be less of, you know, and this is for anything. Like, practice is practice, and your brain could separate that as well. Like, that's more for the muscle memory part. So I'm very curious to see how Barraza goes, but you know, throughout the season, and I think it'll take a few games for him to get warmed up, but he's shown some very promising things in his distribution and his ability to leap. Who's like, he's a fucking cat out there. So I'm excited to see if we can live up to the potential that he has. Most interestingly is the Matt Freese signing, to get all the way back to the beginning of this goalkeeper conversation, where let's foster some competition. Matt Freese is heavily rumored, and it seems like he will be coming to also be a goalkeeper on this team. I think Matt Freese is the backup goalkeeper for the Philadelphia Union. Obviously, if you're behind Andre Blake, much like I tweeted out, it's a reverse Brad Stuver. Much like Brad Stuver was never going to get a minute behind Sean Johnson, the third most minutes in MLS history for a goalkeeper, Freese is not going to get a minute behind Andre Blake, so this is an opportunity for him to compete. And it's interesting because I don't think he's going to be guaranteed a job. He has worked with Kleberson before. He has worked with some of the other guys in on our team on youth levels and such. And, you know, Philly's not too far away, and South Jersey's not too far away from North Jersey. So there's a lot of interconnecting parts. And Freese, you know, he's a homegrown there, so there's a lot of, like, good pedigree with him, but we got to see that too. But that is definitely a situation where it's like, okay, Barraza, you're our guy, but also we're going to light a little fire under your ass. And it's also, I think it is beneficial. I feel bad for Freese if he doesn't get the job and he's sitting here behind Barraza after sitting in Philly. But at the same time, he's going to, you know, us as a fan base should be happy that if Barraza doesn't work out for some reason, and we hope not, and we have another fucking, we bought two scratch tickets now if Matt Freese doesn't indeed come to this team. Great nickname, of course, Matty Ice. Much like Matt.
Very good. No, Matt very Ryan. Good. Very good. I'm here for it.
And his last name is Freese, which, so it makes sense. It's great. We love nicknames. Matty Ice. So Matty Ice is coming, and that will be very interesting as well.
You want to take that break?
I don't know. It does work when I do all the talking, though.
Which is, in fact, the way that most of these things go. Not most of the talking. I did want to jump in, honestly.
Okay, I'm sorry. Well, I'm going to interrupt you. Let's take that break, because I didn't hear one goddamn word you just said.
It's insane, because I can hear you so well.
That's so weird.
It shouldn't work this way. All right, take the break. All right, break over. It's time to talk about the midfield. Trey, I tried to get you to begin here. You refused. We're working from back to front now. Can we please talk about the midfield? Do you think, as was intimated, what is it, fucking up again now?
No, that you forgot the wingbacks.
Sure. Okay, yeah.
Should we link them together?
No, move out to the... Get in there. Talk to me about the wingbacks. What do you see as the future of the wingback position? is, I think, kind of a big question for this. There's a lot of, in the press conference, I think, certainly it seemed like Nick Cushing was saying, the style is not going to change. The players are going to change. The style is not going to change. And that, I think, is not information we are taking for granted. What's your, and to me, the wingback position is like one of the ones that's most emblematic, right? The like the overlap play of this team. It feels really relevant to where we're going in the future. So what do you see as the future of the position?
Yeah, I think it's the most interesting part. I think it's, there's a lot of moves at play. I think there's a lot of timelines at play, to be honest. I think that it's funny that I suggested this let's go through the roster thing by position, and it's we suck at being seamless. But I think that the wingback position is super interesting because it is a place where we're focusing on signing players. And that goes to what you mentioned with Nick Cushing when you said, like, he's not focusing on what he said to us is that he's not focusing on, you know, positions. He's focusing on style. So it makes sense. He's signing players even in what you might want to say is not a position of need. I do want to say, like, I see a lot of complaints. A potential left back signing is in the works. And I see a lot of people say that is the one position we don't need. We have so many bodies. We have Kevin O'Toole. We have Melda Almondson. We have Cakes, Rakes, and Mistakes himself, Chris Gloucester. We've had Thiago play there. We've had Pellegrini play there. But I will say this. Depth is different than bodies. Bodies we have plenty of at left back. Depth, I'm not so sure. I think it's pretty obvious when you see Kevin O'Toole, a draft pick in MLS, and NYCFC notoriously has not played many draft picks regularly outside of Jack Harrison, that you think they would value a player they have on a pretty high wage like Melda Amundsen that they brought in to like replace the level of talent and volume of production that Matarita had on this team. I think it's interesting that Cushing decided to go with Kevin O'Toole. I think it says a lot about what he thinks about Melda Amundsen fitting into the system. I'm just saying that on a personal belief based on what we can see and circumstances. And it makes sense when you look at another rumored signing, which is, I trust the reporters who have been saying this, is Brian Cufre, currently at Mallorca. He's kind of on the bench there. He played for them when they were in the Segunda Division. He is 26 years old. He then went to Malaga in the Segunda Division, played pretty well there. And then he's back at Malaga, at Mallorca in the first division, and is only seeing time really in cup play. He's got like 200 minutes in the first in league play. But I think very interesting.
Yeah, I saw. I mean, obviously, you know, followers of the pod will note that Trey has been doing some hot retweet. Whenever Trey retweets a source in another language, you know that some hot shit is coming down the pipeline. And that he's trying to get in front of it for your benefit. So tell us about Cufre and what it is that's like drawing your attention to him particularly, besides just the fact that he's a prospect.
Most specifically is that he fits profile for both this league and this team in two ways. Firstly, he started with, and Mallorca signed him from Vélez. Or Vélez, whatever. And Vélez is a team in Argentina who is near the top in terms of reputation and talent and everything. But also, there is now three players and would be four with him who were on Vélez like 3 years ago. Or as recently as this year, right? Like, MLS is poaching players from Vélez. But most famously, Thiago Almada on Atlanta, who's perhaps the most valuable asset in MLS. He's from Vélez, and they played together. So I was, after like the rumors started, I was watching his tape there, and I'm like, damn, like he really does pop. He really is an exciting, attacking, cutting in, dribble oriented dynamic left back. Like, he is he's not afraid of using his physicality either. He's a little lean, but he's not afraid to muscle some people. It seems like, you know, Mallorca signed him with the intention that he would, that his ceiling would hit La Liga level, and it seems like they don't think he's necessarily there. He's on an okay, pretty high wage, so I think they want to kind of offload some of that salary so they can stay alive in La Liga. So the second part, outside of being from Vélez, their youth system and their primary team, he also reminds, in terms of a strategy, rescuing a high profile, drowning in Segunda Division South American defender who's like 26, and Alex Callens. You know, we signed Alex Callens to kind of rescue him from, you know, this. He wasn't getting time in Segunda, he was getting time in Segunda, but like it was not seen as like a long term La Liga prospect, which is funny because now he's in La Liga. It seems like this, if we sign him on a loan, which it sounds like we are, that we kind of see a similar kind of reclamation project with like a high value prospect who then went to Europe and is like matured, has time, has a lot of professional minutes, but not necessarily has reached the ceiling that they hoped. Okay, let's take that and have him come back. What I think is most fascinating is that if he does come, he becomes like, outside of Alfaro, like the most senior Spanish speaking player on the team, which is crazy and just says like we're in a very different place than where we were last year. But so when you think about like, yeah, is that the place we need the least amount of bodies? Sure. Is that the place where we can still use depth? I think so. I think you want to put a fire under Kevin O'Toole's ass. You don't think Melda Amundsen can be a consistent starter in this league. Okay, then get this kid. Get this guy who has beautiful eyes and a sweet fucking left foot, and let's see what we can do with it.
That's exciting. That's really exciting. Do you think it'll go through? I mean, like, give us a rating on the likelihood of, like, of these transfer rumors actually panning out.
Well, Kufre is from Jaime, who I trust a lot, and then Merlot said it, and his stuff goes either way because he likes to report on every fucking second of any transfer rumor, so things change with him. But Tom Bogert picked it up too, and confirmed it, and we all trust Tommy Scoops, so I would say that it's pretty likely he's coming.
Which is hot, hot, hot.
It's exciting, you know. It's exciting that the team wants a player like this. I don't know. I find it exciting. I think it's important. And you know, I think it's important to, it's obviously something we know, but it's something we always forget every year. And that's what Cushing said today. And he said, we're not going to rush to sign just any player. They have plans. They want to take their time. I want to remind people, it's a lot, and myself included, this is a lot of self-soothing here, that
self-Susan.
Self-Susan, desperately self-Susan. that my acting teacher was in that movie and he passed away from COVID. Very sad. I don't know why I brought that up.
Yeah, wow. Fucked up.
Okay. What was I saying? Oh, yeah.
You were saying you're desperately self-Susan, and the way you were self-Susan was by telling yourself,
once the European window closes, like, yeah, you might not have had the top pick of the best players, but if teams still want to offload some salaries or whatever, or make a little change on the side, you don't have to compete with other European teams anymore. And also, you can start negotiating for some summer transfers too. So there is some method to some of this madness, I think being patient, getting signings like Kufre, getting trades like Freese, like these are signings that will make our team better. They're not the fucking all-stars. They're not Giroud. They're not the fucking, you know, whatever, but they can help this team. So speaking of right back, I want to give you a chance to say something.
I got nothing to say about it.
Okay.
I appreciate that, but get in there. Right back.
Sure. Tavon Gray.
Because historically, it's also worth saying, you know, historically, okay, there's been, we've been lopsided one way or the other, right? Like, it's either been, it's been clear in gameplay what our favored side is. And a rebuild like this sort of gives you an opportunity maybe to balance the budget a little bit. But what are you thinking?
I'm thinking the right side's most interesting because we have the least amount of bodies, at least compared to the left side, obviously. But more so, like, the talent. You want to talk about, like, lighting a fucking fire beneath someone's ass. This is the biggest one. I find this the most fascinating, and I can't wait to talk to Tavon Gray about this, right? Because one of our first moves of the offseason was we handed Tavon Gray a bag full of cash. And we said, stay here, please. And he said, yes, sir. And he got a bag. He got his first kind of real contract with the team. That's great. Cool. Love it. Then, nearly like right after, the rumor starts spinning up that we were in for 17-year-old Slovenian wunderkind Mitja Ilenic. And that's fascinating to me because we just gave our homegrown boy a bag and we turn around and we spend on a young kind of huge prospect, like a legit high profile.
I'm hearing prospect. A theme emerging here, Trey. There appears to be a desire to foster healthy competition in this league or in this side in 2023. Is that something you'd say is becoming a hallmark of the coaching strategy for this season?
I think it's clear, and I think, you know, when you look at where our homegrowns are, like, obviously we have Nico Benalcazar, also another left back body who's on trial with the team right now, who's kind of between a two and first team contract is, ooh, I just burped, Stephen Turnbull. So there's some competition in the back when it comes to academy or two players, but up front is where it's really heavily weighted with a lot of kind of emerging talent up there. So I find, and in the midfield, but in the more chance creation roles, I think it's fascinating that that is something that the team wants to prioritize. And I wonder if it's a way of kind of elevating a lot of the young players and building this level of competition. I wonder if it's a way of understanding that depth is important over bodies and not high-end talent in positions, so that, wink, wink, when they walk away, you're not fucked, you know? If we sell Tavon, if he has a fucking fantastic 6 months and some team offers us $5 million, $10 million for him, we can say, thank you, we have a fucking wunderkind already. I think that might be part of the strategy, but you always got to look up at the head, and the head is Man City, and you see the level of depth that they, a quality depth that they build that pushes each other, that really does push each other, like so much so that players eventually ask to go somewhere else if they want playing time because they didn't earn their spot. And what that leads to is fucking championships and Champions League and titles and cup wins and everything. And I think that is part of the DNA that I think we were so desperately hanging on to this skeleton of talent that was only bones. And now, of course, we're in a place, and we know it because we talked about it all last podcast, of like, we are in a bad place right now when it comes to ceiling, like level of talent we have right now as analyzed, but the potential right now and fostering that level of competition is insane.
So, okay, so Mitja.
Nice
to meet you. What does he bring to...
That is a great episode title, either now or in the future.
What makes his prospects so strong? I mean, what does this guy do that you think, that he holds a candle to Tavon, or that Tavon should be looking twice at a presumed starting position?
Well, firstly, ability on the ball, ability to serve it in. You look at his physical traits, and I find it fascinating looking at the training videos and looking at his tape. I believe he might have grown 3 inches in the last 6 months. Like, no shit. Like, 2 inches, maybe. He has grown. He also, like, already has spent a lot of time in the gym. So he's got some muscle on him, but at the same time, like, has a frame that very easily can put on weight. So when you're looking at a prospect, you look at that, and he is so smooth, transitioning from offense to defense. It's all, like, the only things he's missing are, like, you know, the intelligence things, the turnovers, you know, things that will take some time. But the pedigree's there. Lots of time, you know, he's played, like, with high-level players and players much older than him for a very long time. He's the second youngest Slovenian cap ever, behind only Jan Oblak, you know, perhaps the best Slovenian soccer player ever, even though he's a goalkeeper. Like, that is real fucking potential. And other teams were looking at him in Europe and wanted to see if he's the real deal. So I think that to get him for 2 million tops, we don't know how much it was, but to get him for that at 17 on a multi-year deal, it feels like a steal. Because I know it's like we have Tavon, but if we want to slide Tavon as a right center back, if we want to spell him, or if one of them gets injured, I think Micha definitely will need time to get used to the league, to get used to the physicality of the league. But he's somewhat exciting. And as Chanot said in that inside training video, like, say hello to a future legend of NYCFC. And that's high praise, but, you know, let's see if it happens.
Let's see if it happens. But we still have more current legends of NYCFC to talk about. Not the least of which, a character who could have much defined last year's season and could have defined more. Keaton Parks is back, baby. Big Bird is back in the center of conversation. Are we finally ready to talk about the midfield, Trey?
Yes, finally we are. And we don't have to spend much time.
Thank because God.
We don't have many midfielders on this roster. Keaton Parks was part of the preseason press conference today. I found it funny. He said, I told him he was now a senior member of the team, and he said, that's a funny thing to say out loud. But it's true. Like, he instantly has become from one of the young guys to one of the old guys. The one concerning thing was that he did not say he was 100% still from his injury and surgery from many months ago. That did concern me, but at the same time, you can't deny the talent. And I love the fact that he said in preseason, he's almost entirely consistently playing as an eight. There's none of this weird, you know, wanting him to play as a six or wanting him to play in a double pivot. It seems pretty clear he's going to have at least a more, you know, fit the natural role that he's in. And of course, when you lose so many players, you have to rely on the talent that you have from the proven talent. And his proven talent is as a shuttler, as someone that can turn defense into offense. So super excited about that. We have Alfredo Morales, obviously. We lost Cacho Acevedo. I think we still are desperately in need of a six, another one, not just for depth, but for flexibility of tactics. I don't see one on the roster right now. I don't know who will play the Alfredo role if Alfredo's not here. I don't. That's missing. And if we're talking about midfield, the 10 is missing as well. We did draft in our first draft pick Malcolm Johnston, who is the younger brother of Alistair Johnson, who just got sold for a nice fee to Celtic. So he's got a brother who's like a legit pro, and he was put on a lot of people's radars because Ben Bender was the number one overall pick last year, and they shared the midfield together. And then once Ben Bender left, Malcolm Johnston took over, and he did really well. He slid to us in the draft because he's a tweener, because I think a lot of MLS teams didn't know what to do with him. He's played many positions. I think Nick Cushing has shown that he values flexibility, and Malcolm Johnson has flexibility. Mm-hmm. I don't know what Cushing's idea for him is. I don't know. Because with these draft picks, they're not under contract, so they don't talk about them a lot. They're not in the videos. They're not mentioned too much until they sign a deal, or if they do. So, you know, Malcolm Johnston TBD, obviously because we need a nickname for him because his name sucks. But he's got a lot of swag. He's a jack of all trades. And I can see him as a Keaton Park spell, probably primarily because he has a lot of attacking run ability, can move between the lines well, and combine with right backs and combine with left backs and combine with forwards and combine with defensive midfielders. Like, I think a super exciting draft pick that we had. I'm glad that his talent fell to us. It's more so like, okay, what's the plan now? I think that's a question to be answered in the future, but I think that's all, that's as far as we got when it comes to midfield depth. We don't have a
10. Do you worry 10. That
we don't have a 10? We don't have one. We don't have a 10. We don't have a 10.
Do you worry about that?
Do I worry about not having a 10? Do I sound worried?
Do you think that this attachment to flexibility that Nick Cushing seems to have, do you worry that it's a bit of a kicking the can down the road? I mean, is there a kind of wishful thinking happening in the front office that, like, fabulous playmakers will just emerge from, like, gathering, you know, intelligent and flexible players? Or is there, you know, is there a plan here? Is there a plan to acquire somebody or to train somebody up into being able to playmake?
Well, we mentioned in the last podcast that Maxi Morales leaving was a surprise. And it kind of seems that way with the way our roster is right now. I think the most telling thing is that in the first two preseason games, where our, you know, veteran 11, starting 11 players are all getting runs out there, who starts at the 10 in both of these preseason games? 14-year-old Maximo Carrizo. We got a 14-year-old playing the 10 right now. I don't think that's a plan for the season. I think that, now look, you know, that is absolutely no shade towards Maximo. He is the jewel and gem of the academy right now. He is the jewel and gem of the twos, and he will eventually, hopefully, be the jewel of the senior team if we don't sell him before he gets there, because he is a special talent. But he's 14. I mean, he's like 120 pounds wet. So I think it's great he's getting so much responsibility and time in the first team. Keaton Parks mentioned, like, him and Jonathan Shore, who's also another academy kid, like, he was saying they're much farther along than I was at that age. And with Maximo, he's like, I also have to, like, watch out for my job. He's like, I'm not just teaching these kids, like, they might take my job. So there is obviously a level of talent there. It's just like, okay, if our plan, that's the thing to watch in these preseason is preseason. It doesn't really fucking matter. We lost to San Jose. We lost to whomever. We lost to Minnesota. You know, we tie this San Jose one. Who gives a fuck? It doesn't matter. Who cares? It's preseason. Our starting players are getting 30 to 45 minutes tops. The important thing is watching these trends. The fact that we've played 4-4-3-3 in these games. The fact that, you know, certain players have been starting every game. Barraza, Chanot, Thiago, Tavon, Maximo, Keaton, Alfredo. Like, we kind of know who's at least in the rotation right now. Those are the trends. So the trend is going to be, like, once we're in Indio playing those Coachella games, whatever, 2 weeks from now, whatever it is, a week and a half from now, those are going to be the times to see, like, okay, what's the plan at the 10? Pellegrini, maybe? Well, today in the press conference, Cushing said he sees him primarily on the wings. Also, Nick Cushing likes to lie a lot when it comes to tactics. So, who knows? can GP play the 10? Are we going to work in another 9 at some point and have Talish play underneath? Who knows? That is the most unclear thing right now on this team. Of a lot of unclear spaces is who's playing the 10. And we don't have an answer.
Would you say that second most is who's going to play the nine? I mean, probably not, right? But it's still a transition that I can make happen right now, which is, because you've mentioned Talish Magno, the big question, of course, is, are we building the offense around Talish Magno? Is he the point person? And can he handle it? Because I think we got a mixed bag of results in answering that question last year.
That is the biggest question. Today in the press conference, Nick Cushing said Talish Magno will play both the nine and the wing. As we said in the last podcast, the team, as I've heard, primarily is preparing to play him at the nine. And also, as I said right now, Nick Cushing likes to lie about tactics, but he can obviously play both. And I think they will adjust on the fly based on who they sign. Fabrizio Romano, of all people, said that we're looking at this Polish young superstar who's 20 years old, who's 6'2" and can play the nine and is blowing people's socks off. But that deal might not get done till the summer and that we're highly interested. So we'll see. But as of right now, it stands, Talish seems like the number one choice. And in this most recent, as we say, look at the trends in the preseason game, not the results, not the footage, not who scores goals. And the trend is that Talish Magno played as the nine in the most recent preseason game. I think that that's what they want. And I think, obviously, it did not work very well when he played that spot in the last season. But when you have a player as talented as him with the amount of potential he has, you just wait because it might just click at one point and he might just start scoring goals like a fucking chicken with his head cut off. So that is the plan. And you know why it's the plan? That's why Eber got traded. And that's why the only pickup we have in that space is Gabe Siegel.
Hey, I was like, I got one more name on my list.
Yeah,
get in there.
Yeah, whatever. I mean, whatever. He played on the youth national team, and he played at Stanford, and he was okay. And he decided to leave to because he got a good opportunity overseas, and he did get a good opportunity overseas at
Cologne
on their two team, but they did not rate him, and they decided to send him back to America. So we picked him up. You know, friends with Justin.
Do you rate him?
I don't know. I haven't seen enough. I would rate, honestly, at this point, I think he is younger, but we also drafted MD Myers, baby. Always love someone that comes in with a nickname themselves. MD. MD Myers is another guy who, you know, who knows? He might not even get a contract, or he might get a two contract, but he also is like a true nine that has proven he can score goals. In college, at least. I think that was a good draft pick. And I think he should compete with Siegel, but Siegel signed a senior contract already. So they obviously rate him. I think, you know, I don't think Gabe Siegel is going to, like, scare Talish Magno into performing better and be scare this guy.
It's not going to quite fit the bill of the rest of these, like, setup competitions.
No.
But he's certainly motivated to, right?
Sure.
I mean, like, you're a player like Gabe Siegel, you know, even in just what you've told me tonight, you're looking for, you've probably seen your own trajectory as being one more, you know, like star arcing than it currently has been. But you've just gotten picked up by the most star making side in MLS, bar none, right?
Yeah, he's definitely got to be.
You're going to do everything that you can to put a fire under Talish Magno's ass.
100%. I agree. I'm not trying to knock Gabe Siegel. I just think we need to see it. That's all I'm saying. It would be great if he can play the nine and play it well. But not many players with his experience and production have come in and lit up the league in their first year. But who knows? You know, we have to, as we said before, we have to trust this team and what they're looking at. And the fact that they're trying to match players very specifically to how they want to play and certain kinds of, you know, meta-textual commentary on their own system with the kinds of signings that they make.
Well, so, okay, trusting, if you trust the team, if you trust the front office, if you trust the coaching of this, like, and you're looking at this roster, assuming, I don't know, I guess that everything
the best possible results come from all of the signings, acquisitions, you know, flirtations with. What do you think? Do you have a senseless starting 11? I mean, like, if I call you out on it and I say, who's your starting 11 from who we've talked about today for the first match of the 2023 season? Do you have a decent guess?
Yeah, I do.
Throw down, baby.
I think given this is going to change by the next time we record or by after. We're recording at a very weird time because I don't know if we're going to fit one in either before or after all the Coachella games, which will tell us a lot more. But I will say if I was to build a team right now, a starting 11, that is also living in the reality of the players we have, the conditioning they have, the experience they have with our coaches, and with what I've heard from like the coaching staff and things like that, I would think that Barraza's our starting goalkeeper day one. I would think that Maxime Cheneau and Thiago Martins are our starting center backs. I would think that Tavon Gray is our starting right back. I would think that if we can get Kufre in before Coachella, that we will have Kufre starting at left back. But if we can't get him in to get enough conditioning in, that we would get, and he's also got to deal with visa stuff, I'm sure, that it would be Kevin O'Toole starting.
Right, yeah.
I would have, it's psychotic because I have no idea who's going to play the 10 on this team. So let's say we could have a double pivot of Alfredo Morales and Justin Hack, that we would have. It's really funny you're laughing because I'm being sincere.
No, I know. It's just funny to hear, you know?
That
it's
we would have. No, hey, man, look.
What a position to find ourselves in.
We tiptoe around it, but this is where we are, baby.
I'm glad that we've tiptoed. I think we stomped pretty heavily. That announced our perspective.
I would have Keaton Parks play in front of those two. I don't think that they're going to do that. I think they might have some other plan. Maybe we didn't talk about JJ. JJ is signed a homegrown contract last year and lit up the MLS Next Pro. I think he might be the emergency 10, and you would see Alfredo, Keaton, and JJ. But let's just say, for my sake, Alfredo, Hack, and Keaton. I think on the left side, I think I would see Pellegrini since he got the start in the most recent match. I would say Gabriel Pereira, who is still fucking in Brazil, who still can't get his visa worked out, but he is too good not to start on day one.
Just pay off an official. It's not that hard.
And Talish Magno up top. I think that's the starting 11 on day one.
Don't ask me for a rejoinder because I'm just going to agree entirely with you. It sounds right to me in particular. That front sounds particularly right, you know? And I think if you went that route, if you worked from front to back, I think you'd probably come at the same, to some version of the same conclusion with there being, you know, it's anybody's guess how the midfield is dealt with. I don't think we have enough information.
If that is the starting 11, what is your wish list in both position and profile of player in that position?
I mean, I think that it's boring to say that the midfield situation is unsustainable and that we need a true 10. That I'm not interested really in watching a bunch of people get tried out. The most frustrating thing, I think, in a rebuild or a slump season for this team, or a new coach season or anything like that, is when the midfield feels unstable because the style of play changes every week and it's very, very difficult to build a sense of momentum or a sense of anticipation, right? Things just slow down and it becomes, and in this league especially, it very quickly becomes, you start to feel the MLS of it all. You know what I mean? You start to feel a tempo that feels below the tempo of what you come to expect from professional soccer. So more than anything, yeah, give me a 10. Give me a 10 that works. And not just a 10 that works, but a 10 that creates. I don't want to be training somebody up into this position. I'm not particularly interested in it. I think also, for me, I'd like to believe in Tavon Gray more than I do.
You want a Micha star?
Yeah, I do. I like that's the adjustment that I'd like to see. I'd like to see that like come off as having been worth it, right? I'm not even really thinking about these prospects because you've watched the game tape in a way that I really haven't. So, but I'd like a kind of solidity there, and in both wingback positions that I think opens up the team creatively, right? It's hard not to see this team falling into the trap of feed it to Talish the reason I call it a trap is because Talish Magno is not, he's not Tati Castellanos. He's not prepared to be Tati Castellanos this season, at least as far as I know. Maybe that's like, it's going in a different direction, both because it's boring and because it's going to be unsuccessful. So any changes which improve the creativity of this side are the changes that I'm looking for. What about you? What's your wish list? What's your position?
Man, it would have been a good bit if I said, yeah, Matt Freese to start at goalkeeper, just to get people.
Hell yeah, hell yeah.
No, I wouldn't do that to our boy. I want to see him at least, you know, make some cat-like saves.
Yeah, me too.
I don't know, because I think Tavon still is like, you see it, right? I think he has a very low floor. I mean, a very high floor. Oops, sorry. And... I just personally think like he either doesn't fit this style or needs to play as a right center back in a back three. That's where I live. Because I do think it's very funny that like, let's say two of our first four signings are indeed Micha as a right back and Kufre as a left back. You know what that reminds me of? Both in their profiles as players and like kind of where we found these players. Reminds me a lot of like Tinnerholm and Margarita, which is the last time we dominated the wings of MLS. So like, I don't know. I think that's very interesting. Of course, like, you know, Kufra has 10 years on Micho, which is insane. My wish list, of course, would be at the 10 as well as like a playmaker kind of thing. I really want to see if they incorporate JJ, but you know, all this fucking preseason stuff is so cloak and dagger, which I get, but it's annoying because I want to know who's not in the starting 11, who plays 60 or 45 minutes. We don't know. Cause that might be important. I don't know. It would be psychotic and the most exciting thing ever if Carrizo actually plays a lot of minutes in the first team this year. I think someone sent us
that. That would be really fun.
It
would be a fun little
We've gotten three narrative. Recommendations for over-unders. And I don't think I remember or wrote down any of them. one of them at least was like Carrizo starts. So. I will say...
Good one. Fair question.
I think as a 10, like, you know, watching that U.S. men's national team game, we got Alan Senora, whose dad used to play in the league, who looks really good as a 10, who's on a free right now. That would be fun. No, but of course, my wish list is not changing, and it's not going to change, and it's either a superstar 9 like Olivier Giroud or a supporting striker like Dries Mertens. Let's go. I don't care. We got a DP spot open. Let's do it.
It's not something that you've said before. I think you try to be moderate, I think, with your, like, you know, jersey sales signings. But would it be fun to pick up Giroud? Yeah, yes. That would be cool.
Also, he's good at soccer. Definite. Also, he happens to be
And we're overdue. Good. We're overdue to have someone come over who's just a fucking... Who's a lightning strike. Like, what could it possibly hurt?
The only problem is that Fabrizio hinting that we want this 20-year-old Polish guy. And it sounds like I'm disgracing that. I would love that, but it sounds like they're not going to look at him and Olivier Giroud at the same time.
No, probably not. Trey, where do you tweet at?
Oh, Trey Fillmore, what about you?
Yeah, it's time. It's bedtime, baby. I tweet at Jake Beckard, and you can find us both at Blue Balls Pod. you've got the senseless starting 11. It's coming around the bend, folks. Listen, the postseason is nearly over. It's just begun and it's nearly over. And if you want to get your merch in time to show up to Yankee Stadium or wherever else, you better jump on our Twitter. First, hit mash that follow button. Head over to the link tree and pick up some merch from our, what is it called? What's our Shopify store? What is it?
I'm looking it up.
Threadless, thread free. Doesn't matter. Who cares? The link is on the Twitter bio. Go click it and buy yourself a fucking sweater.
Blue balls.
Spread shop, baby.
Blueballs.myspreadshop.com.
Let us spread shop for you. I believe to paraphrase Andre 3000.
Great song.
That's all. Thanks for listening to another week of Blue Balls. We hope that you are nice and comfortable and looking forward to a stressful and yet communal 2023 season. If you think anything we said tonight is wrong, jump on Twitter and engage with us so that more people see our shit and you can yell at us all the live long day. Otherwise, we'll see you next week. Thanks so much. Bye.
Bye. We're going to do over-unders and talk about preseason games and shit like that. Okay, bye.
Yeah, man, it's all coming. The real episode. Season 9 starts next.
We still got to do over-unders and talk about real preseason games. So
we do over-unders? Are 0.5
yes.
seasons?
Yes.
I thought they were first episode of new seasons.
Oh, we could do that too if you want. I don't give a shit.
I mean, who gives a shit? It's new. It's numbering.
it doesn't matter.
It's pagination.
Let's just say
bye.
Next episode, over-unders. Talk about some preseason games. Maybe in a week and a half. Maybe to give your ass time to get a good microphone set up. You idiot.
No, don't. It's coming. Don't worry.
Okay, bye.
Bye.